AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag. How do social media, gender roles, and ageism affect agriculture? Find out in Beyond the Field, a podcast brought to you by The Mosaic Company. Listen to the farmers who are changing the industry for the better. Visit beyondthefieldpodcast.com to learn more.
What? What? Oh, man, I see what happened here. Okay, I get it. Here, let me explain. Corn and soybean traders and equity traders saw fallback on the list of things to do this week, and they thought that it meant prices should fall back. Well, we're talking about the clocks, people. It's the clocks, not the markets.
Looks like
we
lost John.
Are you okay, John?
I think we lost John. So live from where I've got clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right via Farm Journal broadcast, here I am stuck in the middle with you on AgriTalk. Today it's Friday, and that means free for all. I'm not Farm Journal News Director John Harris. Excuse me, in for Davis.
I am Farm Journal News Director John Harris. Finally back. The internet gods, let me join back in. And Chip says I get to stick around and play today. How about that,
yeah.
Chip?
That's going to be great, man.
As long as I can stay connected. We also have regulars Jim Wiesmeyer, pro farmer Sean Haney of Real Agriculture up in Canada. We'll kick things off with a pork update from Jennifer Scheich. And now here is that joker to the right, Chip Flory himself.
All right, John Harris. Did you hear Big Apple go all Ron Burgundy on us there?
I did. I was impressed and kind of scared.
Well, he started to read the I'm Farm Journal News. Put it on the page and Big Apple's going to read it for you.
That's right.
Love it, love it, love it. Welcome, everyone, to AgriTalk and a free-for-all, the last one before we get to the presidential elections on Tuesday, November 3rd. We've got a lot of ground that we want to cover today. The list of potential topics for us to talk about goes on and on and on. So we're going to get as much into it as we possibly can. And John, one of the things that we're going to talk about is voter turnout. And the use of early voting is it's eye-popping, isn't it?
Yeah, a couple of states, Texas most notably, has already had more votes turned in 2020 than they had in the entire 2016 election cycle.
Yeah, it's wow. Haney mentioned that there's similar stories coming out of Hawaii. So
yeah,
it's really interesting how that dynamic might change things going forward. All right, let's go ahead and get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Commodity Classic joins a list of 2021 ag events switching to virtual. It was scheduled to be held in San Antonio, Texas, March 4th through the 6th. It now moves to an online-only event the first week of March. Details are still being developed. You can watch commodityclassic.com for more information as it becomes available. President Donald Trump is holding his dominating lead among farmers and ranchers, according to the latest Farm Journal Pulse poll. 85% of the 1,300 respondents said they plan to vote to reelect the president. Just 11% said they plan to vote for Joe Biden.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in today's free-for-all. Just exactly why. I'm not saying that it shouldn't be there. And did you see that I think the National Corn Growers are going to be they're going to make him a member.
Oh, really?
I saw something on that. Yeah. I'll have to look it up.
To look for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Biden, he'll campaign in Des Moines today. That's his first visit to Iowa since winning the Democratic nomination. He's likely to face some questions about his push for electric vehicles, which would, of course, impact ethanol use. And the Department of the Interior this week removed the gray wolf from the endangered species list, signaling a successful recovery under the Endangered Species Act. The gray wolf spent more than four decades on the list, but the population is now thriving in the lower 48 states. State and tribal wildlife management agencies will now be responsible for the management and protection of the gray wolf. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duval says the action shows, quote, careful management and partnerships between federal and state agencies can result in the successful recovery of a once threatened species.
Yeah.
Look at your news, Chip.
Yeah, okay, thank you, John. When you look at some of the states that had already delisted the gray wolf, Montana included in that. Remember the conversation that we had with Marty Klinker on the Farmer Forum just probably 3 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago, about some of the issues that he is dealing with and how many wolves have already been depopulated from the range ground or the rangeland that he operates and that he runs cattle on. The management effort of this species is going to take a lot of, you know, it's all hands on deck kind of thing. And by bringing the conservation efforts and hunting into the process, it'll make a difference. It'll make a difference in how that population is managed. So it's up to the states now. I love hearing that. It's a step in the right direction. Okay, let's bring in Jennifer Shike. Jennifer is the editor of Farm Journal's Pork, joins us right now. How you doing, Jennifer?
Doing great.
Good, good, good. So talk to me about this concept of a zero-carbon pig.
Well, you know, I think there are quite a few different livestock species that are looking at how can we be carbon neutral. And, you know, we know that the dairy industry shared their commitments on Earth Day this year, and the pork industry plans to share theirs next year. I visited with Dr. Brett Kaysen at the National Pork Board, and he really believes that by 2035, the pork industry can create a carbon neutral pig. Not too far off from being there right now, but there's still a lot of things that we need to do. And, you know, one of the things that he discussed with me is that there's a lot of the science and technology that we don't have yet to reach those goals. So it is a big thing to say. And as a scientist, he kind of laughed, like, that makes me nervous. You know, I like to be able to know. But the truth is we've got to start setting those goals, and we have to go reach big, because basically you know, we're coming into time when that's what consumers want. And so we think we can deliver that in the pork industry. And we have the advantage of being able to get there faster than some livestock species.
Wow. You know, in your coverage of it at porkbusiness.com, Jennifer, the whole idea of capturing the methane and cleaning it up and turning it into a product that they can use, that these farms are using on the farm, this is all part of the process that is, it just fascinates me.
Yeah, you know, and I really like too what Pick Billingsley had to say from Sanderson Farms. You know, he said quite simply, you know, we make it so difficult, you know, and there's a lot of cool science and technology that we can implement and things we can do, but a lot of it is just using what you need and not using more, you know, and trying to figure out and be precise. And so you know, there's a lot of different levels that we can make improvements on, but one of them is pretty basic, just being conservative with what you use.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so how did the costume picture gathering go?
It was pretty exciting, except, you know, I was a little bit disappointed in my pork enthusiast out there, because it was definitely dominated by feathered animals. We had chickens and we had some ducks, and so it's really fun. But my favorite costume is the last costume. My husband had a great idea that our family should dress up like trash. So we dressed up as trash, and every farm's got trash. And so, you know, I added it there at the end. But if you need a costume, go check it out, because it's pretty easy to put together.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Jennifer. Thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep, happy Halloween. That's Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. We got the free-for-all coming your way next. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. That's a lot of corn.
Exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we use all this corn right here in the U.S.? POET is working hard to achieve nationwide E15, which will generate the demand necessary to use up ever-increasing corn yields, increasing the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15% would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unify around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag. From transforming overnight into a YouTube star to paving the way for women in agriculture, the stories of American farmers might surprise you. There aren't many places to hear the real stories of the American farm until now. Beyond the Field by the Mosaic Company allows you to be a fly on the wall in these conversations. We interview farmers from different backgrounds and regions about how their paths have led to unexpected opportunities. In spite of challenges like dated gender roles and the looming presence of social media, these farmers show that with grit and creativity, you can forge your own way. They educate the public on agriculture's impact in unique ways and inspire the future generations of farmers to keep the world turning. These stories will entertain, educate, and most importantly, deepen your connection to farming in your community. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast brought to you by the Mosaic Company. Listen today at beyondthefieldpodcast.com.
You need harvest results, not another radio ad. So let's get to the point. Channel Seedsmen place products to perform in your fields, and the results can speak for themselves. Get yield results from your area and less yapping at channel.com/yield. Huh, I guess less talking means more time for music. Classic rock, anyone? That's channel.com/yield for local harvest results. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We got the free-for-all going. Let's bring them in. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jeff.
All right. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. Sean, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chip. Great to be here.
Good, good, good. And Pam Johnson, Iowa Farmer Pam Johnson, is busy today. And sitting in for Pam is John Harith. John is, of course, the news director here at Farm Journal. John, we've already said good morning. So,
but good morning again. And I'm just going to let Big Apple give half my answers this morning.
Just like doing half the open. I love it.
That's right.
I love it. I love it. I love it. All right. You know what? I'm going straight to Twitter because this has something to do with what we were talking about earlier, John, about the early voter turnout. The question is from at NE Iowa Farmer, and I'm going to send it straight to you first, John. Democrats have always had a huge advantage in early voters. Do high numbers this year mean GOP got their ground game going?
Well, and that's the million-dollar question. Voter registrations, the GOP has been leading in several key battleground states. Yep. We won't know, obviously, until Tuesday at the earliest, whether or not that translates into their actual ground game being active in this early voting period. I'd be interested to hear what Jim has to say about that.
Yeah, Jim, I wanted to go straight over to you on that then. Does this mean that we've just got huge Democrat turnout, or did the GOP get involved?
It depends on the state, and Democrats on the numbers appear to dominating Republicans in the early vote numbers nationally by 13 points. But when you look back 4 years ago, same lead. So it proved insufficient then.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I guess the positive here is that we're definitely going to have a higher vote number and people are getting out to vote and exercising their democratic right. And whether it's early or the day of, I think the positive is that people are voting, and that's honestly really, really great to see.
Right. Right.
Well,
absolutely.
Texas added 1.8 million voters since the 2016 election.
Well, it's a good thing that they added, since the early votes are already above their 2016 yes. totals.
Yes.
yeah, but Chip, something that comes to my mind, though, is do people wait in line for 4, 5, 7 hours if they're happy about the way things are right now?
Yeah. And those are your voters that are casting a no vote, John.
I think doesn't it matter how you see the opportunity cost? You may wait in line if you're happy with things, if you're happy with how things are, if you're totally fearful of what the other side represents.
Exactly.
I think that's a part of that equation too.
Yep. That's the no vote for one or the other. And in this case, obviously, what we would be implying is that it would be a no vote on Biden rather than Trump. I think people do that. I think people do. Now, obviously, COVID and not wanting to be in large groups long time and on election day is having something to do with driving the vote. But when we see the kind of numbers that we're already seeing, does it raise anybody's curiosity about where all these votes are coming from, Jim?
I don't think so. You can read some skullduggery into it, but I don't. I just think that this is such a focused election, and both parties are getting out to vote with those, you know, new registrations, and more than a few voters who did not vote in 2016 are registered. Now, whether or not they'll come to vote is another thing.
Right.
I have a couple of relatives in the U.S. that I talked to, Chip. They voted early, and I asked them why. And they said the reason was that they voted early just to avoid any potential issues trying to actually vote on the day of, whether that was like, you know, some sort of, you know, terrible violence, I'll put it that way, or maybe, you know, trying to get through activists or the long lines that are potentially there. They're just trying to avoid it.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Well, let's admit it, Chip, that the last 4 years have been more politically engaging to the average person than any election cycle previously. And so you're going to see more people turn out and be part of that process.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. And, you know, Jim, this goes back to what we were talking about in 2016 ahead of the elections about, we were wondering then if candidate Trump, if elected, would continue his tweeting like he obviously has for the last 4 years. 4 years ago, you really liked the idea that Trump was using Twitter as much as he was. Do you still have that sense, Jim?
Well, with the lack of a true media now, Chip, he almost has to. Now, I don't like his mean-spirited, tweets, but boy, he has to go above the very biased majority of the media. I don't blame him.
Yeah. It's access like we've never had before. And I think that's one of the things that John is talking about. The platform has given the president direct access to millions and millions of voters out there, and they've engaged. Yes. They've engaged with it, John. Mm-hmm. I think your point is legit.
Is there
and not just
access?
There, but just in the big rallies and everything else, there has been the news cycle every day that he finds something else to drive that news cycle every day. It's just the political process has been more in front of everyone more this time around than it ever has been.
Right. Okay. Paul Niefer, farm CPA from Clifton Larson Allen, was on the show Wednesday. We talked about primarily about the Biden tax plan and what it would mean if Vice President Biden does win. Obviously, it's not an overnight change, Jim, but I saw on First Thing Today, Pro Farmers First Thing Today,
and your policy update that you did some comparisons. Talk about that.
Well, Biden will not do away with all the Trump tax cuts. He usually says on individuals he wants to increase, you know, those who make above $400,000. But where it's going to hit even the ag sector is those capital gains, you know, taxes increases, mm-hmm. and on the corporations. And I've seen various analyses, Chip, both sides. It's saying. His tax increases and his whole platform will increase taxes on most Americans, but you won't get that from, you know, those studies that, you know, right. that Biden lists. So the bottom line, if you make a lot of money, you're going to have substantial taxes, and corporations, small right. businesses are going to see their taxes increased rather significantly to help pay for some of his programs if he wins.
Right. Now, I'm not looking to tap into my 401k anytime soon, but there continues to be rumors, talk that those 401k funds, when they roll out, or IRA accounts, when we start to tap into them, that those funds could be taxed somehow, some way under the Biden plan. Have you seen that?
No, I'm you know, okay. not familiar with that. But if it needs legislation, I don't know whether the majority of Democrats will go along with him on that one, Chip.
Right.
You know, that's kind
See,
of a
that's the
third
thing
rail.
That people, exactly. That's the thing that I appreciate that reminder that just if it's in a Biden tax plan, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen because it
no.
needs that congressional support.
And also the margin. Let's assume the Democrats win the Senate. The margins are going to be important because if it's just 50-50 or 51-49, there will be a couple of moderate Democrats who may not go along with this, and that gives them a lot of control. So
yeah.
look at the numbers of which party in the Senate wins and by how much.
Right. Sean?
But President Trump hasn't been exactly clear on what his plans are to pay for it. Do we just assume it's supply side from this point going forward? Is that what the assumption we're supposed to make?
Well,
Jim,
they
I
both
don't know.
Would add to the deficit and debt. I mean, I think they're yeah. both consistent there. We're adding
yeah.
up the debt.
Yeah.
And,
increasingly.
And yeah. that tin can is full of dents and has been kicked down the road so many times. I don't know when we ever really deal with it.
Well, okay, I do wonder if Biden wins on Tuesday, do we see all of a sudden a bit of a, you know, a bit of a switch here where all of a sudden we see a whole bunch more Republican fiscal hawks? It becomes a little bit easier to talk about those kinds of things, especially if Biden's talking about raising some taxes. You know, we've seen some commentary out of McConnell.
Okay.
In terms of
absolutely,
you know, we can't afford this or
we'll talk about that when we come back. We got to take a break. It's a free for all. Wiesmeyer, Harrith, and Haney. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Nationwide E15 would generate demand for increasing corn yields. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more about supporting Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, getting into the end of the week, and at least the selling has subsided a bit in here.
Well, a little bit in the soybean market anyway. Seeing a little bit of price strength there. We did have a daily export sale to unknown destinations this morning. A couple cargoes sold there. So that's a little bit of price support. You know, I think one of the things that we've seen throughout the week is bull spread unwinding. Yeah. We're seeing that in the corn market with the December contract under pressure, a little bit of pressure, and then the back end of the market firmer. So some of that there. And then also in the soybean market, even with the gains, the front end of the market is trailing the back end. And so we are seeing more of the bull spread unwinding in that market as well.
Yeah, very good. This cattle market, again, I'll say the same thing that I said to you yesterday morning. It just acts like it doesn't want to go down.
Right. Big update yesterday, and fighting a good fight. You know, I mean, it's fought a lot of macroeconomic pressure this week. And while everything else seemed to be concerned with COVID and the increase in cases, the cattle market has performed really well. And so that's somewhat surprising, but also encouraging, I think. And I think what we're seeing in the fundamental side is that the cash market is starting to shore up a little bit. Still waiting on the box beef to come around, but you know, there's some hopes there, I think, that both of those will firm as we move forward.
Well, and it's really impressive again today with the Dow 400 points lower and cattle trying to push to the upside. What about hogs?
Hog market trading to the upside, so regaining some of the losses from earlier in the week, but still working on a little bit lower for the week, but not as bad as what it looked like it would be earlier on.
Gotcha. Thanks, Brian. Have a good weekend. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
That's the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. He's on vacation this week. We'll be back with us next week. Okay, still got a lot of ground to cover, but I want to go back to the topic that we had at the end of the last segment. We've got the free-for-all going. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture Sean Haney, Farm Journal News Director John Harith. Biden wins. Jim, does that – Sean was making the point that it may give – I don't remember if it was Sean or John right now, but does it give the Republicans some cover to go ahead and be at least try to be a little more fiscally responsible?
Yes, it will. And they will do that. And one clear example, Chip, is let's assume on your assumption that Biden wins and even they you know, have a trifecta. Do you see Mitch McConnell in the Senate having a COVID aid package approved of anywhere near what Nancy Pelosi wants in the lame duck session of Congress? No. Yeah. So that will have an impact on the aid vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're definitely saying the conversion comes early, Jim.
Yeah. Oh, not instantly. We may not know the results of the Senate for a while, but oh, absolutely. Because it'll be a different Republican Party if you don't have Trump there.
Right. Yeah.
And McConnell's hinted at that by some of his commentary already. So I agree, yes. Jim.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of that aid package, boy, Mnuchin is starting to show his frustration, isn't he, Jim?
Well, he knows that he was used, you know, to a degree by the House Speaker. She tailed him along, and you should have listened to McConnell because he was not going to hold that vote.
Right, right. Yeah, so basically in a response or in a letter, Mnuchin told Speaker Pelosi that your all-or-nothing approach is hurting hardworking Americans who need help now. There's some truth to that, guys.
Yeah, at minimum, it would have been hard to pass anything above $500 billion, Chip, in the Senate because of McConnell and the 15 or 20 senators, and he doesn't want to be embarrassed by having more Democratic senators vote for the package than Republicans. So, you know, this thing was down from the get-go.
Wow.
But,
crazy.
Jim, why is there no more push from the White House to get something done? With the obvious benefits to them of the checks going out before the election, why wasn't the White House pushing harder on this?
Well, I think McConnell told them.
Hmm.
But wasn't there like a period there where like McConnell basically said like we need to focus on the Supreme Court approval and that is more important right now than the relief package. It wasn't that kind of a choice that they made?
Well, I don't know about choice, but that was one of the reasons, and not just Supreme Court, other judicial appointments as well, which will be his signature issue.
Yeah, there are so many different narratives that possibly come out of next week. You know, you see this week where President Trump has really left Lindsey Graham absolutely hanging and looking ever more closer to defeat. You saw what happened with Martha McSally this week and how he, you know, have odd behavior in terms of bringing her on the stage. If he does lose, It's going to be interesting to see how you, Jim, you mentioned a new Republican Party. It'll be interesting to watch the behavior and some of the sentiment on who tries to shed him as quickly as possible and who maybe tries to be, you know, version 2.0 as the Republicans look for a new leader.
Well, we'll have to see the result. Let the people speak, and then it that should direct where you're going in your party for both parties.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also okay. 77 days of retribution if Trump is a lame duck. I think there'll be some scores to be settled.
Could be. John, talk about the Farm Journal Pulse poll a little bit more. You had the details in the news, but overwhelming support in the Farm Journal Pulse poll for President Trump.
Yeah, and it stayed right there as we've been running this head-to-head polls poll. The latest was 85% Trump, 11% Biden, 4% undecided. And that's roughly where it's, I think the first one we took was 82% Trump, but still within the margin of error. So it's been solid among our Pulse voters, and it has been consistent among our Pulse voters. And I think you had some good insight in there, Chip, that the focus is on, among those voters, the focus is on policy, not personality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And not only just the policy, but Jim, I think there's a fair number of farm voters that are looking at the fact that China is in here and actually buying, and that's having an influence.
Oh, big time, yes. And you're seeing it in the beans, in the Milo, yeah, in the corn, et cetera. But from the Democratic viewpoint, once we get the results, Chip, if they can move 3 to 5 percentage points into the typical rural vote, they'll claim victory, and then they'll try to build on that. But that remains to be seen. Based on the Pulse poll, we don't see that encroachment.
Okay.
And doesn't it, the fact that how much farm country supports him, it proves that, you know, he was correct in how he played the ethanol situation. He drug it out, knew he was never in any sort of political risk. He tried to appease both sides. I guess in retrospect, can't we say that he played that one, his cards right on that issue?
I want to see Iowa.
Yeah, we've got to see Iowa. I hosted a town hall on ethanol with NCGA President John Linder and Growth Energy CEO Emily Score earlier this week. By the way, you can watch that on agweb.com if you want to take a look at that. So, Jim, as you sort through this, does Biden or Trump offer more opportunity for the RFS and ethanol policy, biofuels in general, going forward?
I would say Trump does because of this. Now, Biden's in Des Moines today. I want to see how he handles the electronic vehicles and his proposal to put 50,000 chargers out there, because that'll go in and speed up the process, Chip, of peaking the RFS. So at least that's, you know, that's where I'm coming from.
Okay. John, what's your take on this?
I think there's opportunity either way it goes. It's whether or not the industries are able to take advantage of that opportunity. With Donald Trump, obviously, you've got the E15 window opening there. We hope that his commitment to ethanol continues when he's not facing another election. It'll be interesting to see how he balances that poll between ethanol and oil going forward. But there is promise there because of E15. With Biden, as Jim rightly points out, there's a much sharper push for electric vehicles. But in the interim, I think, and we've talked about this before, if ethanol and oil can come together and make the pitch that while we look at your transition to electric, there's an opportunity here. If we can raise octane with ethanol, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, improve efficiency by using ethanol to increase octane in fuel, mm-hmm, and therefore help the automakers increase the capability, mm-hmm, of these vehicles, there's a real opportunity there for ethanol, but that's going to take some work.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we had the conversation with Dr. Andy Randolph from ECR Engines yesterday about that new production car speed record, 311 miles an hour. It hit 331 miles an hour and was burning E85. This production vehicle is turning out 1,750 horsepower. And it's doing it with ethanol, and it's because of the higher octane. It's because of everything that you were talking about. But if you want to hear if you want to hear the message that you need to be giving to consumers that question the safety, I guess, of E15 for their engines, listen to yesterday's conversation with Dr. Andy mm-hmm. Randolph and Robert White from RFA, because I just thought it was fantastic. And, you know, part of the big conversation was the move to nationwide E15 that is really being pushed now, and what that does for this corn market. If we can go from a 10% average blend to a 15% average blend, depending on how much fuel we're using, of course, but if we can get back to pre-pandemic levels, it would mean another 7 billion gallons of ethanol demand, and that's 1.8 2 billion bushels of corn demand that's there consistently. That's got to be the focus as we reset the RFS, isn't it? Doesn't it, Jim?
Yes, but boy, the next who are the players, Chip? If Biden wins, who's his EPA administrator? Who's in Congress? Because the next 2 years are going to be major for the future of the RFS, because the authorization runs out in 2022. So what will lawmakers do on that? What will the administration propose? So there's some big, the next 2 years, someone told me the other day, are potentially the most consequential for, you know, biofuels. Sure. Because of the interest in the climate and EVs, and that's bottom line.
I think that's why NCGA and others are getting behind the Bustos bill, the Next Gen Fuel Act.
Well, they should, and I'm glad they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, when we come back, we need to wrap this up. We're gonna figure out exactly what it is that we're gonna talk about during the break. But one thing that we need to talk about for sure, and I'm going to preview it right now, John Harith, I think most of you know, John Harith and Jim Wiesmeyer team up every week and produce the Signal to Noise podcast. They've been streaming the live version of it for the last few weeks, and I think it was all in preparation for Tuesday night. This is going to be awesome. I can't wait to watch this. We'll give you the details coming up next right here on AgriTalk.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us this morning. We got the free-for-all going. We've got John Harith, Farm Journal News Director, Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, and Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. And as I said, John and Jim team up every week and do the Signal to Noise podcast. They've been live streaming for a while, and it's leading up to something on Tuesday night. John, what's the details?
Well, starting once these polls start closing, you can go to agweb.com. We'll have an election map up. And then below that, we're going to have a feed of just ongoing commentary from you, Chip Flory. Sean Haney says he's in. Jim Wiesmeyer is going to have commentary. I'm going to have commentary. Clinton Griffiths will just drop little snippets as we make observations through the night. And then at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, we will have basically a live Signal to Noise on AgWeb as Jim and I and some others talk about what we know at that point in the evening about how the election's turning out, giving our analysis. You know, not only just the numbers of where we sit, but we'll drill down into some key states and counties right. that may give some hints of where the thing is headed, and also look at some key ag races, like, of course, Colin Peterson up in Minnesota, the race for Senate in Kansas, of course, Joni Ernst there in Iowa, and some right. of the other key races.
Okay. Give it to us again. How do we sit in on this?
Just go to agweb.com on election night. And again, okay. we'll have our commentary through the night leading up to the live video stream at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. And if you want a preview, tune in to Signal to Noise on the AgriTalk Facebook page today at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central.
1 p.m. Central. You can get the live streaming of the recording of this week's Signal to Noise. Okay.
Yeah.
Wiesmeyer, one of the meetings that the timing is never good, and I'll admit, even going virtual, I didn't have time to sit in on it this week, but it's the USDA. They have two a year, I think, USDA data users meetings. Did anything come out of that that really caught your eye?
It did. A spirited question and comment on USDA trying to defend their China corn import estimate that stands at 7 million tons, Chip, when U.S. corn sales are nearly 10.6 million tons to date. And, the World Board, chairman, Mark Jackanowski, who I know, I used to work with him at Informa. He's a good guy, but boy, his defense was basically saying these export sales can get canceled at times and that the World Board tries not to forecast policy changes. I think that was a weak argument.
Yeah, I think it is a weak argument. Well, and you know what? It's time. It had to develop. It had to kind of prove its worth before we get that change. And former World Board director chair Seth Meyer, who is now down at University of Missouri at FAPRI, had a conversation with Tyne Morgan this week and talked about basically they're out of time, they're out of real estate, they're going to have to make a change in the November 10 supply and demand report.
Yeah, evidence is building because Ukraine is having trouble with their crop on corn. They've already imported supposedly at least 4 million metric tons China from Ukraine. And it's just, the numbers are starting to make USDA just look really, really out of touch on this one, Chip.
Yeah, and the fact that they are bringing not just corn, but they are bringing in sorghum, they are bringing in all sorts of feedstuffs makes me believe that there is a significant need for it. And Haney, you sent me and I read the story on the shortage of containers. Give us the details there.
Yeah, so there is certain container companies that are basically saying they're not going to be moving containers to the U.S. because there's so much tied up in Asia. And so this is a concern. Not like a lot of commodities, obviously, Chip, are shipped by bulk, bulk ships.
Right.
Containers are more for smaller customers or other items, maybe beef, for example, that is processed. I reached out to the Port of Montreal this week, and they move a lot of containers, and they said nothing to worry about. So I think it feels a little bit like the impact is potentially a little bit over-exaggerated right now out in some of the media space. You follow this closely as well, though.
Well, absolutely. And you take a look at what is happening with the barge traffic right now. If anybody is wondering whether or not we're even making an effort to gear up to get the product in position to get it out of this country and into Chinese ports, just take a look at the barge traffic reports, you guys. This is phenomenal. And I, the last time I was on the Mississippi River, we went out and did a little bit of a cruise, take a look at the fall colors, and I couldn't believe the barge traffic. It's just, it is going hot and heavy right now. So it's the commercials are doing everything that they possibly can to get that product in position. Okay, Jim, do you want to make a prediction?
I usually do, but as we head into this special program, I may on that, Chip, but I'm going to put my analyst cap on.
Okay.
And I'm going to withhold pending late news, okay?
All right.
I want to see what happens really today in Iowa, and I know Trump's going to go, what, he's in Rochester, Minnesota. So, I still think this is tilting very close.
Okay. Haney, any predictions?
Well, I think Trump's going to win Iowa. I think Trump's going to win Florida. I think Trump is in danger in states like Pennsylvania, and he is really behind in states like Michigan. So, if he loses Pennsylvania, he's in trouble. And I think Biden will come up with a victory that is very much closer than people think.
Okay. I had a conversation with former USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack earlier this week. And before we went on the air, I asked him what he thought of the odds. And his comment was that there are many more paths to the White House for President Biden than there are for President Trump. You look into that, and there is some truth to that, but both still have paths that work. So it's going to be very, very interesting. Guys, great show. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Sean, we'll talk to you again later. Jim Wiesmeyer and John Harith, 1 o'clock Central Time. Just head to the AgriTalk and AgWeb.com. Watch that signal to noise. Have a good day, guys. One farm family has a side hustle. Another's spouse had to step away for it to succeed. Listen to the Beyond the Field podcast by The Mosaic Company. Hear stories from farmers whose common thread is about changing the industry. Learn more at BeyondTheFieldPodcast.com.